Good morning. It's certainly not hard to forget the season we're in at the moment, is it? When you you look at the stage and you look at the hall, that we're here in Madhuban at a very special time in the heart of the festive season. And this morning I was just thinking that, and I've been to Madhuban so many times, and I'm sure that many of us sitting in this hall have been here on numerous occasions. But I was thinking, you know, how much do I really value my time here? That this is really the highest pilgrimage place, it's Baba's home. And to really value each moment is, I think, really important. Because perhaps it's, we don't really know the future, but sometimes I do wonder how long will we be able to come and enjoy such a relaxed atmosphere as we are at the moment. And so each moment is extremely valuable. This morning I just thought I would share a few thoughts about dancing the dance of sanskaras. Because it's an expression that Baba has used actually for a long, long time, but especially over the last few years in my study of the Moolis, Baba has mentioned this many times, and I know that when I hear that expression, it has a very powerful image, because it just invokes the feelings, the very deep feelings of the closeness of the family and working together, working in harmony, which I think is one of the most unique and special things of this life. Because I think in my own personal experience that on this amazing journey in which we're all on, in this wonderful life, on the journey to purity and perfection, probably the greatest disturbance in the soul is when there's a disagreement, or as we say, the language in the Brahman family is that there's a clash of sanskaras. And you know, sometimes I think that, you know, here I am, I've left the shores of the old world, but I haven't become pure yet. And I'm living and working with many different Brahmins, and they haven't become pure yet. And yet still Baba gives us this aim to have this dance of sanskaras, such a relationship of closeness, of unity, of purity at this time, even though we're all in the process of change. And one of the things which I feel is a wonderful symbol of this dance of sanskaras is the rosary of 108. Because all those beads in the 108 rosary are unique and are very different. And yet, because of a deep sense of love for Baba, it's almost like I've merged my own sanskaras, and Baba's sanskaras are the blueprint, Baba's sanskaras are the model. And because of that, I'm really able to come so close to other souls that even though I'm unique, even though I'm different, even though I remain an individual, we can all be threaded in one rosary. And I think that when you've seen one of those rosaries which they use in India, and I must admit I forget the name of the little beads, it's something like Vruksh or Vriksh or something. My Hindi's not particularly good. But when you see them from a distance, they all look the same because they're threaded as a similar size. The person who makes the rosary makes sure they're a similar size. And yet, when you look very closely, each one is extremely different and unique. And I think that it is one of the magic feelings of this time to have a sense, such a sense of unity and harmony. I mean, how do you feel when you're working with others and there's such a sense of closeness, such a sense of communication, a feeling that we're all working together for Baba's task? I think it's a really, really special feeling, and it feels right. It feels like this is how it should be. Because when we do experience, and virtually every single Brahman on this journey will experience the other side of the coin, but perhaps there is a clash of sanskaras. Somehow my sanskaras just don't mix with another soul. And you know, sometimes when I've had that experience, it's not just a sense of conflict, it's even something a bit deeper. It's the sense that I'm away from where I should really be, I'm away from where I really belong. It's like I'm away from my original nature, which is to be in harmony with others. It's like I've stepped out of my boundary of truth. And it's not a comfortable feeling. And I think somehow deep down there's a sense of disappointment, because I think in each Brahman there's that memory of that time in the golden age where the soul has experienced such a sense of closeness to others, a harmony of sanskaras, the true dance of sanskaras. It's a memory within us. The golden age is really like a world of love, and this is really what we do aspire to at the moment. And sometimes I, you know, have this thought, what am I like at dancing? Actually, I don't know, was everyone at the Peace Park yesterday? Who was at the Peace Park? Yeah, most of us were there. And I don't know whether you took to the dance floor, but I had a go, and I trip over my own feet whenever I dance. I'm fairly clumsy at it. It's almost like I've got two left feet sometimes. But I think the ultimate sort of result really of knowledge, of yoga, of our dharana, is that I can match and mold and relate to virtually every single soul sanskaras. It's like I can sort of learn how to relate to every different type of soul, so that every soul can sit in my heart. And I often have that image that, you know, even if one soul is outside my heart, it's almost like I still carry some sanskaras that don't allow me really to relate to all. And it's really the wish that the soul has to be able to do that. But I think that, you know, for me there's different types of dances that we have to learn in terms of this dance of sanskaras. And one is what I sort of call the dance of similarity. And that's really where sometimes you have very similar sanskaras to another soul. And we all have this experience at some time that we're so close, we have similar ideas, similar feelings, and it's almost like, you know, we're working together on such an intimate level. And I remember years ago, before Daddy Jenki took over as the co-administrator of the BKs, there was Didi Manmohini. I don't know, did anyone here meet Didi Manmohini? There's one, two. And you know, Didi and Daddy Prakashmani, they always used to say, we're two bodies but one soul. You know, it was a mantra that they always used to say, because they used to feel that they were so close in the way they worked together. And I was thinking last night, just watching Judy and Tanya from Canada dancing, that it was perfect, wasn't it? And they were doing a similar motion, and it's something so attractive when we work together. But to be frank, I think that's not so common. Perhaps what's more common is the dance of cooperation. And that's really a dance where we're different, and yet I use my specialties, you use your specialties, and we make that decision for Baba's task that we're going to work together and, in a sense, bring my specialties and your specialties together so that we can, you know, help in Baba's task and make things move forward. And so it's like a dance of cooperation. There are different movements, but they're still harmonious. And perhaps that's a little bit like the Russian sisters who were dancing last night. It was so beautiful how they were working together, but in yet doing different movements. And then there's another dance, which I think is the dance of acceptance. And that's really the dance where I decide I'm going to do my own thing. perhaps a bit like the brothers in the park yesterday doing the bhangra. You know, each one was doing their own thing, including me. And, you know, I'm doing my thing, you're doing your thing. And actually there's really no conscious effort to be really harmonious. And yet I sort of accept the way I'm doing things, and you, I accept the way you're doing things too. Even though the dance has no rhythm, shall we say, or no real structure to it, I can still work together with you. And so I think that it's like in this life, you know, we have that relationship with Baba, but where does that relationship with Baba manifest in practical? It's revealed really in the way I relate to others. And I think I've got to become so wise as to learn this incredible art of dancing with all different types of others. Sometimes there will be the dance of similarity. Many times there will be this dance of cooperation. Sometimes it will be the dance of acceptance. But what I really want to learn is those positive ways of relating to others. Because sometimes what I find is that, you know, when people are dancing together and both want to lead. If you ever dance, perhaps, you know, we don't do it so much these days, but you know how one wants to lead the other one? One wants to move the other one in my way. And this sometimes, I think, is one of the great sort of challenges in matching my sanskaras and having harmony with others, is that some find it very difficult to cooperate and really only know the type of dance which is my way, my style, my movement, and want to move the other dancer in that way. Well, sometimes even both of us want to lead, you know? We both want to lead. Have you ever seen two people dancing and both of them want to lead each other? It's like a big power struggle that goes on. And there is this, like, this clash between the two. And what my personal experience is that one of the things which I find is really the most difficult in trying to develop this harmonious relationship on a sanskara level is what I would call controlling behavior, where I'm trying to really control the behavior, control the way this person may be doing things, this person behaves, or the way things are happening around me. And you know, this can be very overt, it can be very, you know, obvious, where someone might say, no, it's got to be my way. But mostly, I think it's what I call covert, or very, in a way, subtle, the way we don't cooperate with others and we try to control. And it's something that doesn't allow us to enjoy the beauty of the dance with others. And the way controlling behavior really manifests is even in things like withdrawing. You know, sometimes we're involved in something and it's not going the way I like. It's not happening the way I want it to happen. So what do? I withdraw. I step away. No, I'm not involved anymore. And sometimes on the surface that looks like, oh, someone's just humbly stepping back. Actually, that can be extremely controlling behavior to get my way. It's a very subtle thing. Or even getting upset, you know. Getting upset is, what do children do? What do children do when they want attention or they want their own way? What's their behavior? What do? I think they get upset, don't they? They throw a tantrum. And sometimes even we can, you know, get upset, and once again on the surface it's like, oh, you know, the soul's hurt, and then others around think, oh, the poor soul, what will we do? But it can be a behavior once again that I can get my way, I can control. And really, I think in Brahman life, even if I'm an instrument, it doesn't mean that I'm a controller. I think that as an instrument soul, you know, sometimes what I've observed from my own personal experience, that when we take up responsibility in Baba's task, and all of us at different times get a chance, And I remember once someone saying that Brahma Baba said that to test the quality of the children, he will give them responsibility. And that's really true, I believe, because when you take responsibility, you will be challenged in different ways. But I think sometimes we confuse responsibility with control, that everything I have to make sure happens in a certain way. And even mentally, I begin to try and control people's behavior, even my mind. You should be like this, you should be doing this, this should be like this. And I think that doesn't create a spiritual atmosphere. It's like I'm an instrument of Baba. And actually, the more that I remember Baba and I'm close to Baba, I think I create an atmosphere that brings people close. This mental control actually moves people away from my heart. I've often had the experience that, when I mentally am critical or controlling, the sort of karmic effect of that is that I really lose the love from the hearts of those around me. And so this controlling behavior can be so subtle. Even there is acceptance sometimes, but it's acceptance based on my conditions. I accept you as long as you do the things the way I want them to, I want you to. And so there's sort of inbuilt sub-clauses and sub-sub-clauses into my acceptance of you, not just as you are, but if you perhaps do things the way I do. Even sometimes there's like exclusion. In a subtle way, if those who don't really cooperate with me, I exclude. And it's not overt, once again, but maybe I just don't give opportunities or I don't really involve and really reach out to include. And all these sort of things, sometimes I think that, as we go further in Brahman life, that we begin to see that these things like controlling behavior, the dance of sort of this sort of controlling nature, is something which doesn't allow me to do this beautiful dance with others. And even the other night when Baba was speaking to us, I was just thinking another one of the dances is the dance of dissatisfaction. And, sometimes I may be dancing with somebody and I'm interacting and yet I'm never happy with the way you're doing things. You know how that can happen? You're never okay. There's always something wrong. I'm always picking a fault. It's like, no, your arm's too high, your leg shouldn't go this way. It's like, it's never right. And I think that, I remember once Baba saying, and we all have sort of certain things that really stick in the mind, but I remember once Baba saying, the soul who follows the path of falsehood will watch others, and the soul who's following the path of truth will see the self. And I wonder, sometimes I think, how many times have I heard that? I've heard it thousands of times. I know it, I believe it deeply, but to really, really take responsibility for how I feel and not constantly find points of fault or dissatisfaction around them, in others, it takes deep, deep spirituality. A deeply spiritual person will always adjust my behavior and will not have the expectation that the other one has to adjust for me. And, and this the other night when Baba was talking, that this year is the year of contentment, that really, when I look at this world, it's so much discontentment, isn't there? I mean, what is this world? It's a world of incredibly dissatisfied people. Because desires are just running wild, and the more desires we have, the less we can feel that amazing sense of that beautiful place inside myself where I feel absolutely calm and satisfied and at peace. That I find that I often describe as like a place in me where I come home to, where I feel so still And it's like I'm at peace with myself and every other soul in the world, just so satisfied. And in a sense, this is the pinnacle of spirituality, isn't it? That no matter where I am, no matter what is going on, I feel satisfied. And you know, sometimes I even wonder when we come to Madhubam, because someone I was just sharing with yesterday, we were talking, was saying to me, in their own center, they sort of know everyone in the center. They feel a part of it. They're a valued part. And then suddenly you come to Madhubam, and there's thousands of Brahmins here, and so many are old and experienced, and you know, they just feel a little bit lost. It's like, you know, who am I and where do I belong? And, you know, everyone's getting attention, and, you know, sometimes feelings come up inside me. Does anyone know I'm here? Does anyone know I exist here? You know, it's human nature, I think, you know, to want to feel acknowledged or, you know, in some way. Sometimes we do feel like this. And yet, I think Baba gives us such a deep sense of our self-value that no matter where we sit, we can sit in that beautiful space of dignity, as he said the other night, the seat of self-respect, and just feel my own value. And I, for me and my Brahman life, you know, how do I really experience genuine contentment? I mean, what's your feeling? How does that beautiful place where I feel so still and easy, how do I create that? And you know, observing me, observing myself, there's one thing that absolutely creates that and makes me feel so, I'd say, so satisfied. And that's when I genuinely taste the richness of Baba's love. And to me, the fundamental desire of a human soul, the fundamental need of any soul, Brahman soul, is that purity of love, true love. And it's like when I'm able to take that from Baba, to me it's like that fundamental need is satisfied. I just sort of go, you know. It's like I'm home, it's where I belong. And then there's so little desire. There's not the desire to be seen. I don't need attention from people. I don't need their respect. I don't need all those sort of superficial desires that sometimes kick in. Because I think if there's not that contentment, I think, based on that deep love from Baba, then sometimes I think those superficial desires do come to compensate the lack of experience of that love. And so I want attention. I want others' respect. And sometimes I compromise myself trying to, you know, I want acknowledgement. I want a lot of these sort of desires do come. And my own experience is really when I taste that depth of love, then it's like that is the real key to a true sense of inner contentment. And there's, I just think, so many sort of different sanskaras, obviously, that don't allow me to really match my sanskaras and nature with others. They don't allow me to do this dance and many, many different things. You know, there's sometimes ego, there's sometimes jealousy, there's many things. But recently I was just thinking, well, you know, wondering what is a sanskar? And I don't know whether you've really sat down to think deeply. And I mean, you know, this morning in the Muli how Baba was saying the whole part is recorded in the soul. You know how Baba was talking about that quite a bit, and he's talking about Christ and so on. Each one has their own part. And that always, and often the language Baba uses when he says that, that this is one of the great wonders of this life, is that the whole part is latent in this most minute of all things, that the entire part is latent within the soul. It's a wonder. And it's like all the sanskaras are there. And we know that a sanskara is like an impression of an action that's stamped on the soul. When we do an action many times, it's stamped deeper in the soul. In psychology, they say that when you do an action repetitively, at least 20 times, it becomes a habit. So in other words, when we think something, when we react to something, when we speak something, when we do something, many times we fix a behavior in our sanskaras, in our subconscious. And this then becomes, it dictates to me. And what I have been thinking is that our sanskaras, in a way, are like little time capsules. It's got like a little time capsule inside me, but it's all locked up. And then a personality comes in front of me, or a scene of drama is like the lock, the key that unlocks, and that unlocks the sanskara, and all the feeling which is stored in the sanskara washes into the mind. And it's like the sanskara is like a little time capsule of an experience, a feeling. It's like emotional memory. It's like a memory inside me of something. And I just unlock that sanskara and it washes into my mind and begins to dictate to me how I feel. And it's really like a little time capsule, because it sits in my subconscious and it can be dormant there for such a long time. I always remember one of our older sisters, whom all of you know so well and love dearly. I always remember her once saying that she had been a BK for 6 years, I think, if I remember. And suddenly all this irritation emerged inside her, like this anger. Irritation is like a form of anger. And she was saying it was amazing, because I'd never been an angry person in my life, you know, and let alone, you know, after 6 years of, you know, Baba's knowledge, then all this feeling of irritation just emerged in me. And, you know, sometimes I think this is a great confusion for some of Baba's children. After many years, it's like something triggers and opens one of these little time capsules, and it begins to flood into my mind and my heart, and something which I hadn't really experienced, let alone in my Brahman life even previously, sometimes comes. And then the soul sometimes think, am I going backwards? What's going on here, you know? And yet I think we need so much wisdom as to the process of Brahman life, that these little time capsules will keep opening up. And sometimes they disturb others. And you know, one of the most, perhaps, if I can say, hurtful things is when in my heart I have such sweet intentions to be close to you, to love you, and be in harmony with you. But without any effort, my rusty sanskaras give you sorrow. You know how that can happen? It's like without any, and people are taking sorrow from my sanskaras. It's almost like, it's like my karma. It's like my karma in a way. And I've got to sort of accept that, yes, I'm still in the process of change, because there's things in me that are still giving other people sorrow. But the main thing is I'm aware of them. And when I'm aware of them, that's the sort of beginning of the process of change, that I can work on them. Because I even remember once Daddy Janki saying, and I can relate to this, that sometimes we observe one of my sanskaras that is perhaps creating some disturbance in others. And I make so much effort and I change it, and yet still people remember me in the old way. You know how that happens? Have you ever had that experience? And for instance, you know, you may have been not very punctual, always arriving late. I'm sure no one here is like that, but and you change your sanskara and you start to arrive on time, but still everyone remembers that you were always late for 10 years. And it takes a long time to erase the memory out of other people's mind. So I've changed my sanskara, but my karmic account is still there. And sometimes it's a little bit like that, that we do bring change, but, you know, my karmic account is still working. And, you know, even that can happen in many, many different ways. Now, I may have been a bit of an angry person, you know, reactive like this. And yet I've changed that nature, and yet still people have the memory of me in that way, and it takes time. And actually that's where I need patience, because I have to actually change my behavior over a long period of time for people to have the trust that I've really changed. And I can remember once Baba said that, you know, when you get angry, and I think he said in the Sakha Mulis, that when you get angry, even once, that people take like a mental photograph of that. And then every time, you know, let's say you lose your temper, you throw a tantrum or whatever, or you get even just a little bit angry, people take a mental picture of that. And every time you come in front, that image pops up onto their screen of their mind. And it's like you have to be peaceful 100 times to erase that memory. So it's almost like one little loss of control of myself for a few seconds actually implants a memory in others for a long period of time. And it takes a long time to erase these things. And this is sometimes the learning and the patience of Brahman life. But I think that, you know, these little time capsules, when I start to learn and educate myself about sanskaras, I think it helps me learn and educate myself about how to deal with others and their sanskaras. Because in one way, you know, what is a knowledgeful soul? You know, what is the proof that a soul has absorbed the knowledge? To me, one of the main ways is contentment, there's tolerance, there's detachment. They're tangible ways that knowledge manifests in my behavior. But I think also that we have to become so wise as to understand another soul's sanskaras and then how I have to learn to dance with that particular soul. I have to adjust my dance so that I can work with them. And it's actually, it's not seeing fault in others at all. It's actually just learning how I can understand and work with them. And in a way, I think it can be quite a tricky process, because there's layers, you know, in the soul. And we're old souls. We have so many layers, I think. And to really understand another soul's sanskaras and then have harmony on that deep level, I think we need to be really knowledgeful. Because, you know, sometimes I have to do the dance of humility, sometimes the dance of love, sometimes the dance of respect, sometimes the dance of lightness, sometimes the dance of putting you ahead. Sometimes there's so many types of dances that I need to learn. But when we actually get to know a soul, and all of us, you know, casual relationships, they're easy. I often feel that, you know, it's easy to have casual relationships, someone I see every so often and we can be very sweet. My true dharana manifests in the relationships I have each and every day. You know, the people I live with under the same roof, the people I interact with on a regular basis, and if I have good relationships with most, it means that I must have some good dharana. But there's layers, and I think the obvious first at the top is what we often call nature. And nature is often what I think we show to the world. It's like the personality that the world will see. But actually my nature can be very different from my sanskaras. You know how actually we can all learn to create a personality that can interact on a sort of that level, but what is in my sanskaras can be different. Actually, I can have a great lack of self-respect in my sanskar, and yet I can have a nature of great confidence. It's very possible. You know, I show confidence to the world, and yet my sanskar is of lack of self-respect. And the other way around, I can have a lot of self-respect as my sanskara, and my nature is very, very soft and gentle. Maybe that's I think self-respect manifests itself in a very humble and gentle nature. And so there's sort of like there's the level of nature. And then sometimes we meet another layer, and it's like what I sometimes call the soft sand scars. And they're often the more recent stamping on the soul, the more recent impressions, perhaps just my last few lives. And these can be things which we can learn about and change more easily. And there may be things like intolerance, impatience, a little bit of a habit to tell lies, things like that, there's soft sense scars, and with a little bit of effort, a little bit of knowledge, a bit of yoga, I can begin to become a bit more patient and tolerant, more honest and so on. But as we dig deeper, there's what I call the hard sanskaras, and they're the sort of sanskaras, I think, that have been etched in the soul since the beginning of the Copper Age. It's like almost from day one of the Copper Age, I've started to stamp this stamp, and it's gone so deep, deep, deep into the soul that they're so much a part of, every sort of thought and every behavior of my present self. And these are the ones of lack of self-respect, of insecurity, of fear, that are really, really deep in the soul. And sometimes I think it takes time to really understand, and those souls really, those sanskaras really to emerge in the soul. And yet even deeper than those hard sanskaras, what is there? There's the original blueprint of the soul. And I think that's what Baba looks at. Baba looks beyond the nature, even the soft, even the hard sanskaras etched from the Copper Age, and his vision falls on the set of sanskaras which is original. And sometimes I have the image of the soul like a tree. When you cut down a tree, I know that's not very environmentally friendly, but there's all the rings. When you cut an old tree, there's hundreds of little rings, and it's like the wood on the outside softer, and as you get into the middle, the soft, then the hard sanskars, and then at the very center is the strongest, the original, the essence of that tree. And that's those original sanskars. And I think that's where Baba's vision lies. And that's why we can all dance with Baba, because he looks at the real part of me, the elevated part of me, and withdraws that. And I feel that if I really want to dance with others, if I really want to dance with most souls, it's like I've got to take a leaf out of Baba's book and my vision, learn the art of my vision falling on that original nature, that original sanskaras of others. And I've often shared my first meeting with Baba, and it was in 1975, and it was in the History Hall in Madhuban. And I was about 8.5 weeks in Gyan. I was so new, completely new. And we sat in the History Hall, and Baba gave the Mauli. And there was probably 30 of us there, maybe 35. It's just so different from today. It's just amazing. And there was, at the end of the Mauli, then, as in was in those days, that Baba would meet everyone individually, and was, as still is his practice, but Baba would sit in front, and you'd sit very close, just like where this pumpkin is here, and Baba would give drishti for a long time, actually a few minutes, and then he would speak. And I had this experience when Baba was giving me drishti. It was like his vision was like a laser. It sort of went so deep into the soul, and it searched around. It was almost like he was looking through all my sanskaras, It's like the whole of my part was on fast forward and Baba was looking at it all, And then his vision fell on that original part, the elevated part of me. Perhaps you could say, the pure part. And It's like his vision, like a laser beam, fell on that and withdrew it to the surface. It's almost like his vision introduced me to my higher self, my original self, my pure self, my true self. And I honestly felt that I was a changed person from that day. There was something, I looked at myself in a different way because of Baba's vision on me and his purity of vision. It sort of emerged a set of sanskaras that was like a time capsule that had been locked up, you know? Baba's vision emerged it. And I really do feel that when we're interacting with each other, that if my vision can be so clean and so elevated, and as Baba's vision, you know, to look at that set of sanskaras of another soul, it's actually, I don't know, when you that vision is on you, you feel so special, so elevated, even when sometimes the daddies give a srishti. I've heard many people say, the other day I met with Daddy Gulzar with a group, and they're all saying just her drishti just made them feel so special. And so I think that, you know, there are the different layers in the soul, but where's Baba's vision is on those original ones. And I remember about maybe a couple of years ago, do you remember how Baba said we have to spin the cycle? And I think we had to go in 5 seconds or something from the eternal to the original to the worship worthy to the Brahman to the angel. So, do you remember that? And it was almost like Baba was saying that children, within the soul there are these sets of sanskars. Why do we get so locked into the present set of sanskars, you know? Because this is the set that's influencing me and this is the set that I see in others. And when there's always conflict, you know? When I'm just sort of stuck in my present sort of set of sanskaras that I've got at the end of the cycle, and I can't get myself out of them. And therefore, that's all I can see in you too. All I can see is your stuff as well. Yet Baba's saying, no, no, let your vision fall on the original set or the elevate, you know, the eternal set or the angelic set. And then it's a way that I can actually, it's a foundation of a relationship with another that's much more elevated or much more pure. So I think that, you know, there's many sort of laws of how to match and sort of dance with other sanskaras. And one of them I always remember is that there will always be different sanskaras. It's a law of drama. Different sanskaras aren't wrong, they're just different. And in fact, the drama would be incredibly boring, wouldn't it, if all of us had incredibly similar sanskars. In fact, the beauty of the drama is the color and variety. And yet sometimes we feel threatened by difference. A lot of difference makes us feel uncomfortable. The more I feel secure in myself and comfortable with me, I think we love, the more variety there is, the better. So it's an absolute fact or law. There will always be different sanskars. And secondly, I think another law says really that if, you know, I want to dance with another soul, my vision has to focus on their original sanskars. If I really want to learn how to dance on a deeper level, not just a superficial, hi, how are you, sort of, but really have a sense of resonance, a sense of connectedness with others, then my vision, like Baba's vision, is to fall on the elevated or the original sanskaras of others. And then I think another law really says that if I find it hard to get on with other souls, to match my sanskaras with other souls, first look at me. I think that, and you know, that sounds so simple and it sounds so obvious, but in my own experience, it's such one of those sanskaras etched from the copper age is still the mind. The habit is to go outside, to find fault and to say, why don't they change? You know, like we know it and yet that behavior is so ingrained in my thinking. And I feel that, you know, that true spirituality is where I always look, what can I change? Because I believe, and I've experienced sometimes when I've really adjusted myself to certain souls, that actually the nature of the relationship does change. You know, the relationship can improve dramatically. But ultimately, I think there's a law, really, that when my sanskaras are pure, I'll be able to get on with all souls. And it's almost like that I'm in the process, I'm a work in progress. That's what artists say, you know, when something's being painted, or they call it a work in progress. When they're writing a play, they call it a work in progress. We're all works in progress, you know. Bhava's working on us all to get us, you know, to that elevated state. But while that is happening, still I've got to have that aim to work with others and to really connect with others. And you know, sometimes I wonder, well, some of my sanskaras are a bit clumsy and unattractive, so the dance doesn't look so nice. You know, how can I really bring change in myself so my dance or my behavior is much sweeter, so I do get on better? Because I think one of the great blessings of this life is really to win the blessings from the hearts of others. That, you know, when really I've seen that when a Brahman soul's dana is accurate, and it's like they follow Baba's directions, not out of force or anything, but with real love for Baba, and their dana is accurate, you will win the love from the hearts of others. And it's like a blessing, it's like a power in my own life, and it's a very, very special experience. But, you know, sometimes my sanskaras are a bit rough, and they do rub others up the wrong way, and then we think, well, you know, how do I reprogram myself? And I think the other night, you know, when we met Baba, what was he saying? You know, what did he say? Something like, something that amuses Baba. Do you remember? He was saying something that Baba finds amusing. And then he always says, should I tell you? Should Baba tell you? You know, he dangles the carrot in front of us. And what did he say? Is when, oh, Baba, you know, what can I do with my sanskars? You know, that mantra, oh, what can I do with my sanskars? Like, this is the way I am. I'm stuck with my sanskaras. And I was just thinking about that sometimes, you know, when we really understand the soul, that I do have the original set of pure sanskaras, my deity sanskaras, I've got all these pure sets of sanskaras, but I identify so strongly with the present body conscious ones. And actually, sometimes I think more powerful than the sanskara itself is that I identify with it so strongly. I see it's me, you know. I can't separate myself from this particular weakness. It's so much a part of who I am that identification is like holding on to it. I just hold on to it because I can't separate me. And actually, the trick, I think, what Baba is saying is, children, just begin identifying with your original sanskaras. And slowly, slowly, the power of the present impure ones has less and less effect. It's almost just like saying, well, what is the real me? Is it the conditioned sanskaras or is it the original ones? And even old Brahmins, you know, with a lot of wisdom, I think we still identify with those old ones, so we keep them alive. You know how we keep them sort of alive and sort of working in my life. They're still sort of quite strong. And that's why I think that once we begin to become really knowledgeable, we start to shift my identity and really identify with that which is original. And I think that's, to me, that's a really, really deep thing, actually, how to do that. Because sometimes it feels so real. Well, the ones that I'm experiencing are my present ones. They're the real ones. So am I just cheating myself, thinking that it's not me? But no. Baba's actually saying no. The real you is the original you, the pure you. That's what Baba sees. And that's what I've got to see. And the more I see that in myself, I will start to see it in others as well. And then I think I form a relationship on a really, really deep level. And only at last year when I came to Madhuban, I was thinking, you know, we adopt this life, we follow the principles, we have faith in Baba, but sometimes the question comes in the mind, you know, are my sanskaras really becoming pure? Have you ever had that question? are they really becoming pure? Not only that, sometimes I have the sort of thought, how can I try to do it quickly, you know? I like the shortcut. I'm one of those people that likes things to happen easily, not laboriously. And what I was really thinking is that I feel that there's one sanskara that if we plant in the soul, it's almost like if I put it in the soul and water it and let it grow, it networks automatically with my elevated original nature. And I just think that it's a very simple thing, but if I plant the sanskara of all relationships with one Baba, almost automatically that will network with the higher self. In other words, the sort of that one sanskara will connect with, you know, the sanskaras of humility, the sanskaras of self-respect, the sanskaras, so many positive sanskaras. It's a natural connection. Just that one sanskara, I really think, is having all relationships with one. And similarly, on the other side, some Brahmins make so many efforts, and yet I think we sustain the sanskara of relationship with other souls, bodily beings. And so on the one hand, we're trying to remember Baba so much, but subtly, I am holding on, I'm depending on another soul, and the effect is that I sustain my old sanskaras. I'm sort of, because a relationship or being dependent on bodily beings means that that will network with all my old sanskaras. And sometimes it seems like I'm making so much effort in this life, but because I haven't really let go of that sanskara, then it's connected to a lot of my other old sanskaras. And so it does, you know, sustain a lot of impurity in the soul. And I really think that if I really want to go ahead quickly, if I honestly, and I think it wins trust from Baba, when I really say, yes, Baba, you're the one that I'm absolutely having all relationships with at this moment, it's like I'm under Baba's canopy and other things can't influence me so much. And then I think we win Baba's trust. And even if I don't have a lot of other skills or specialties, that one sanskara I've often noticed is the sanskara of the souls that really move ahead in this life, and the ones that Baba often gives a lot of opportunities to, because he knows that it's mainly Baba who's influencing the soul. And I think almost like a natural purification comes when we have that sanskara. But the reality is, I think that all of us have to live and, you know, work with such a variety of souls. And I think that the soul with a lot of gyan and yoga and dana will dance with this one, dance with that one, dance with this group. You know, just learn how to relate to many. And I think what I've personally learned over the years, it helps sort of, I suppose, connect and you know, do the dance of sanskara, so there's that lovely sharing of good wishes and pure feelings with others, is really to learn the art or learn the value of every soul that I interact with. Because, you know, each soul has so much value. It just depends on my vision. And quite frankly, with almost any soul, depending on my consciousness and vision, I can see a whole lot of rubbish in them, or I can see them like next to God. I really can. It just is what I decide how I'm going to look. And so why not take the decision to see value? And I know, you know, sometimes the habitual sort of nature of the self to find fault, to find weakness. For me, how do I measure? I think for me that one way that I can assess, you know, how much ego I have is really my vision and my attitude to others, because, you know, if it is critical, if it's finding fault, to me that's one of the most real indications of sort of, you know, how much arrogance there is in the soul. So it's like really learning the art of finding value in others. And, you know, sometimes if it isn't really obvious, to become a little bit knowledgeful and look deeper to see what's there. In my experience, when I first began with Barbara, I was living in London at the time. And, you know, I used to just be amazed, and I still am, just how Daddy, she's just always comes up with different things, you know. I just can't believe how she's just like a magician that just keeps pulling new stuff out of the bag. I find it amazing. But a lot of it comes from observation of others and learning from them. You know, you just see someone wins the love from everyone. What is it in that soul? And, you know, always learning about others, and it's a really wonderful nature. But I think, you know, the other thing which I'm really, I think probably has been the main focus for me over the last few years is just, you know, the power of good wishes and good feelings. To me, that is just so absolutely fundamental to self-transformation. I don't think it's about only just having good relationships with others. Actually, it's mainly about keeping cleanliness in my own mind. And I think when we discover the importance of good wishes and pure feelings, I think it's absolutely fundamental to building a good spiritual stage, that it's something which, you know, I try to pay a lot of attention to. Because my own experience is that if there isn't good wishes and pure feelings, it's very hard to have good yoga with Baba, quite frankly. Because my intellect is constantly caught up in this sort of subtle karmic feelings, subtle conflicts, subtle disturbance, subtle hurt with others. I'm constantly, you know, caught up in sort of relationships. And when I have good wishes and pure feelings, it frees the soul to have unadulterated remembrance with one. But not only that, I think it also emerges purity in the soul. Because, you know, when you meet somebody, and as soon as I meet them, my intellect clicks into finding a fault or a criticism or reacting, once again, I think that networks automatically into the weakness in the soul. And it's sort of the whole spirituality of the soul goes down. But when I actually meet somebody and interact, and good wishes kick in, good feelings, just the feelings are the most powerful form of communication. What it does is it also networks with my purity in my soul, and it sort of keeps the soul sustained on an elevated level. It sort of connects with the purity within me. And that's why I feel that, you know, just keeping those good wishes and good feelings for everyone is just so integral. And I remember once Baba was saying in one of the Avyakt Mulis that, you know, he was talked about these different feelings, and that the whole of this study was to create these feelings within the self. And I think it's all about, you know, learning to, you know, create these feelings in myself. And when, through my attitude, I give these to others, it's almost like others experience those feelings too. They say that in community, you know, when you communicate with others, there's, you know, the three levels of communication is the verbal, like, you know, I'm speaking at the moment. But what is it? There's, you know, they say 80 to 90% is nonverbal, is your body language and your feelings. And feelings are really, what are they? They're the vibrations of my thoughts. So when my thoughts are clean, people get clean feelings from me. And in a sense, this is the number one service I feel, is just having such a pure mind that people get those lovely, clean feelings. They feel comfortable, and they sort of connect into their good sanskaras too. So they respond to me in that way. And so, you know, the dance begins to happen. So I think that You know, it is a journey, isn't it? You know, it is a journey, I think, and obviously with some we have good relationships. I think for everyone there's always a challenge for a few, but they're the ones we really learn from, don't we, as to how we can sort of change maybe where there's a sanskara clash and use my knowledge, use my yoga, use my dana to try to upgrade perhaps a negative relationship or even a relationship that's not so positive into something which is really positive, so that really, you know, I feel the confidence I can dance with any soul, because I think that's, you know, the unity in this gathering is what will really glorify Baba, because we're all so different. We're from so many different backgrounds. I always remember once Baba said, how will he be glorified? And he said, when there's one from, you know, each country, each religion, each profession, each background, and they all say, my Baba, together. And it's like we go beyond the differences which the world is concentrating on at the moment, isn't it? Look at the world. Well, they're concentrating on difference, emphasizing that. Whereas Baba's emphasizing the unity based on our original sanskaras. I think that's really special. Anyway, I don't know whether we've got a little bit of time. Whether anyone would like to make any comments or ask any questions or share some experience or something, you're most welcome. Otherwise, we'll have some meditation, which we will anyway before we finish. But if there's anyone who wants to ask anything, please feel free. If you can speak loudly, there's a sister here then up there, and then and I'll probably repeat the question. Oh, okay, thank you. You can too. Did everyone hear? She wants to know what a really, really, really deep-rooted sanskara is. Well, if you really look at it on one level, the most deeply rooted in the soul are the sanskaras of purity, truth, love, happiness. Really, they are. They're the sort of eternal sanskaras, original sanskaras, but since the Copper Age, I think there's a few that are really deep-rooted, and one of them, and my experience of Brahman family, is that there's every single Brahman has the challenge of regaining our self-respect. And, you know, we do courses in self-respect, we do so much, don't we? I mean, how much does it come up? And yet, isn't it amazing that we know it, we believe it, and yet still sometimes we can just be overcome, even after many years sometimes, with quite deep feelings of lack of self-value. Because it is an incredibly deep-rooted sanskar. And I was just sharing a room with Brother Ken from Brazil, and we were talking about this, just, you know, sometimes you can see what a lovely soul someone is. It's so obvious, all their qualities, and yet the soul, even after many years, finds it so hard to have a sense of my own value because it's been etched so deeply into the soul. And, you know, there's so many courses, so many books, so many things written, but really I believe, and what Ken and I were sharing, the thing that really is the gift to regain true self-respect and shift that sanskara is the experience of Baba's love. There's no more powerful way, because in a sense, when I accept the love of God, it seems to be the door to really accepting myself on such a deep level. But then sometimes the next question is, well, how do I accept the love of God, you know? And I think, you know, I sometimes, to me these days, some, you know, when I talk about meditation to people, it's become so simple. You can give a long technical explanation, sit down, become a little point of light and blah, 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 blah. We all know that. But in a way, I think it's key is like giving yourself the permission to be completely loved by Baba. It's almost like rather than holding all these things against myself, I can't really be truly loved by God because I said this, I did this, I'm like this, the shopping list of reasons. It's like I sidestep that and I say the way actually I'm going to become healthy again is to allow myself, forgive myself, absolutely drink the ocean. And honestly, you know, that's what I've done, and I've noticed an enormous shift over many years. It's still there, you know, but it's a lot has shifted. And I think in some sanskars, it's the long-term thing, quite frankly. They don't change overnight, but it's working with them. And I used to sometimes think that, you know, most of us sitting in this room have probably, you know, we've studied a lot. We've all been to school. Many of us have been to university. And when we study, we have methodical ways of learning. You know, we learn in a methodical way because I have to learn something to pass an exam. And yet then we can become Brahmins. And we just sort of, I think we have a lot of blind faith. We sometimes just think, oh, well, if I just sort of get up for Amrit Vela and listen to them all, one day all my sanskaras will just fly out the window and I'll be a pure soul. If only that would happen. I think sometimes we have to create a methodical plan of change. And especially the deep-rooted sanskara, which keeps cropping up, it can be lack of self-respect. Insecurity is a huge one. The fear of loss is a huge sanskara. You know, we all know our own unique ones. And sometimes I think I just have to create a plan of change. And that really means, I remember once thinking about this, and what I did was I began to, and it was around self-respect, and I began to observe what were the scenes in the drama that made the soul sort of lose its value, you know? Because actually you can see there's certain times where we actually feel inferior or we lose our self-respect in certain situations, and then find knowledge to deal with that situation. So that the next time I walk into that situation, rather than just kicking into my old thoughts, apply what Baba has said. Now at first I might only have 1% success, you know? I will only maybe just get a little bit of progress, but I keep doing it, there's 5%, 10%, and I actually see I'm shifting. I'm not a victim of my sanskara anymore, it just kicks in and I feel so weak and disempowered. I'm actually changing it. But it's incremental. It happens bit by bit, step by step. Especially, I feel anyway, those deep ones. And yet, I think in Brahman life, there's nothing that gives us more confidence than when we start to shift something on that really deep level. Really. And I think they are those, you know, those deep ones of lack of self-respect, the sense of insecurity, certain fears which I have, you know, that if I actually acknowledge, yes, they're here, but what's the knowledge to apply, create a plan and monitor my progress, I can actually see that I'm changing. And I feel it's because we need some sort of methodology, otherwise it's all a bit haphazard. There's no doubt if I do get up for Amrit Vela and I listen to the Muli, that's our foundation. But we also have to sort of focus our effort too. And sometimes I've had the thought, I can remember I used to, when I first became a BK, I used to have a chart, and I didn't make up the chart, someone did, but it had 108 questions in the chart, you know, to check so many things. I used to fill it out at night, and I never ever finished it. I would fall asleep, you know. A few times I'd sort of wake up in the middle of the night, and I was my chart on my lap, you know. Ridiculous, you know, in a sense that you sort of try to do so much, you know, and oh, I've got to become, you know, tolerant, and I've got to have good vision, I've got to overcome my ego, and I've got to conquer anger, and there's so many things that even just thinking about it, I feel tired, you know. But I find that if you focus on one thing, if you have 10 efforts, it's like you don't see any real progress, because your energy is going in 10 different directions. But if you have one effort and put 10 units of energy in that one effort, then you see you're getting somewhere. And quite honestly, these days for me, I would mainly concentrate on things like, you know, the fundamental practice of soul consciousness. Really deep soul consciousness. And even the thing I've been practicing this year is, what does it really mean to be incorporeal? You know, the fundamental things. Because they're sort of like, they contain everything anyway. So I think that they're some of the deep-rooted ones. There was a brother definition of the difference between sanskars and nature. Well, I can remember that it's sometimes the nature can be a manifestation. And one of the examples I remember Daddy once using was something like the nature of a lion is that, you know, to roar, but the sanskara is courage. And, you know, sometimes I think the sanskara is my true self, but often, you know, the way the sanskara manifests, you know, is sort of like when you have courage, sometimes you might be quite a strong, or, you know, you roar. That's how it sort of comes out in your nature. The only thing is that sometimes I think we create a nature to suit, you know, to sort of get by in life, if you know what I mean. And even I've been amazed, you know, sometimes I've met some people whose nature is so calm, and yet when you really talk to them, they'll say internally they're absolutely peaceless, you know. I've met people like that. And so we can become expert actors, actually. We can, you know how we learn by through culture, through family and this sort of things, we create a nature that can sort of get by, even though, and we can be suppressing my sanskars. And it's one of the things which I've felt that many times as Brahmins, you know, we come into Brahmin life and we just move along so happily for a period of time. And then sometimes there's upheaval internally. And I was only talking to someone yesterday who told me, you know, she's been in Gyan for 15 years. And she said this huge upheaval was happening in her, and yet she was moving through it. And sometimes I think what can happen is that the bhakti sanskara is to suppress. And when we come into Gyan, we adopt all the principles and the lifestyle, and somehow the sanskaras just sort of, or maybe they're a little bit suppressed for a while, they're not actually transformed. And then after a while they re-emerge again, and it can be a bit sort of distressing. And actually I think it's almost the way, it's the process of Brahman life. It doesn't happen to everyone, but it's almost just like saying that now is the time to really change those sanskaras, because the bhakti sanskara, we couldn't change them. So the habit is to suppress rather than transform. So sometimes things we thought we'd changed reemerge again. Has that ever happened to you? It can be a bit scary sometimes. You thought you'd change them and then they come up again with force. But this is then the real message to me that no, this time, rather than just pushing them down, I've got to use knowledge yoga and actually try to change them. Mask, yeah. Sorry, she was just saying that maybe I was using the word nature for the sort of the external personality, but she said maybe that's a bit confusing because sometimes nature in English can mean a deeper word, and she was suggesting that maybe the word mask or persona is a better word than the word nature. Is that correct? He's made an interesting point. He was just saying maybe the natures from this life and the sanskaras are the deeper things we've carried from the past. And yeah, I mean, even sometimes I would call them habits, you know, that, and they're the things that often change when we come in Gyan, because we have eating habits, you know, habits from my family, my culture, like you say, and they change quickly. And that's why we sort of see, wow, this is easy, because the things of this life do change very easily. So it's sort of terminology, what we use, but I think we're getting the rough idea. Yeah, there's different layers in the soul. And that's where I think the initial change are the things just of this life, and that's easy. Customs and systems on the surface. I don't know whether I'm going to do justice to your question, but I think what I understood was that it's like you've redefined your understanding of purity. Sometimes, you know, we're always aspiring to a certain sort of holier-than-thou sort of state of cleanliness, and yet you sort of, purity is actually, you know, something which can be, you know, much different. Is that right? It's sort of, and Baba said that the other night. Yeah, he did. He said that, you know, the manifestation of personality of purity is to have good wishes and pure feelings, exactly like you say. Yeah, I think that's really true. Even to understand, you know, what purity is. I mean, the ultimate definition of purity for me is really just like an unbroken link with Baba. And that what happens is that the link keeps breaking, and that just means that there's things I've got to learn. That's all it is. There's what is it that breaks my link, and then how can I learn so that I can maintain this sort of sense, the feeling of being really close to Baba. To me, that's probably the real state of purity, just the feelings of belonging and being close to one. Okay, well, maybe we'll wind up there. And we'll finish with a few minutes of meditation, just 5 minutes or so. Thanks. Om Shanti.